I met up with Joan Chittister in the library of Penn State University, where she had just finished a book signing. Earlier this year, Penn State, where she earned a doctorate degree, honored her with a symposium and exhibit chronicling her life's work. I was one of the readers asked to give a lecture on one of her books. In a far-ranging interview, we talked about her latest book, some revelations in a new biography that's been written about her, and what it's like to see your life's work on display.
It's almost impossible for me to believe that all of that body of work has been done and is just simply exposed to the world like that in one sweep. And you say to yourself, how blessed I am that I have spent 25 years able to do what I love most in life, and that is to consider important subjects and to try to talk about them in ways that touch other people's lives.
I was very surprised to hear you say at the conference today that you admired the sisters who were working with the hungry, the homeless, the immigrants who needed English as a second language, and you compared yourself to them and thought that your writing wasn't as significant.
Well, I never think of it in terms of significance, and I guess the flip side of it for me is, you know, the person who says, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life, really applies to me. I really love what I do. It's not a burden. I used to say to the sisters, I don't know what I think till I see what I said. And so it's just so much a part of me that I say to myself, yes, but what are you doing? I see them, I see my sisters working with the tiniest little needy people and with the immigrants from everywhere in the world and with the poorest of the poor in our section of the city. And I say to myself, how valiant they are. But well, what I do, I see their effort and I don't see much from me.
Well, I saw books translated into numerous foreign languages, so I think that your work does go out into the world in many corners of it. Let's talk about your latest book, which is about the sayings and the wisdom stories from the desert fathers and mothers. First of all, for those who may not know, explain the desert fathers and mothers, who they were.
Yeah, in about the 3rd to the 6th century, a body of very devoted ascetics looked at this kind of street Christianity and said, these people are not really living an intense Christian life, and they're not bringing their whole selves to it the way they should, but we will. So from the 3rd to the 6th century, literally thousands of men and women moved out into the Egyptian desert and around that area and set up small communities of hermits. And they supported one another in large part, but they lived very strict Christian lives. Now, the people in the city back in Rome, they knew this was going on too, and they knew that these were great spiritual figures who had devoted themselves entirely to spiritual development and the spiritual life, and they began to follow them out to the desert to ask for advice. We call it spiritual direction today. It's the same thing when you come right down to it. But there was a format to it, and the format was this. It was, Domine duc verbum, give me a word, tell me something that will help me in my life. So they streamed out to these holy figures and often spent a lifetime like you would with a good spiritual director. Then people began to collect these, quote, sayings. So we have thousands of sayings from this early period. My question in this book was, are we keeping these things just because they're marvelous historical artifacts and they tell us how people thought in that era? Or might it be possible that there is a wisdom in this early insight that is as much meaningful to our era and our life as it was to theirs? And I argue that if wisdom is really wisdom, it's eternal. It lives in every generation. We know that from great literature, don't we? Some literature lasts forever because it's talking about real human questions. This is the same kind of literature.
They really do speak to modern people. I mean, there are stories in there that talk to people who have businesses, who had businesses of that day, but they're still speaking to people who have businesses of this day.
That's exactly right. And, one of the lovely little stories about, Holy One, tell me, should I leave my business and come into a community? And the Holy One says,
come into a monastic community.
Yes, yeah. And the Holy One says, no, take care of your business and that'll be your community. And it's just such precise good sense, and there's nothing made up about it. There are no false penances that are followed. There's no great liturgical format that's being used. It's all about the development of the human person and the spiritual soul.
There's a number of them, too, about how the spiritual life, the sacredness is all around us, that we don't have to go seeking for this.
I'm a monastic. And that's exactly who we are as a spiritual movement. Benedictine monasticism is over 1,500 years old. Now somebody ought to ask, how is it that anything can last that long in this revolving door society that we're living in now? What's the answer to that? It's a wisdom life. It's based in wisdom. It develops wisdom, and its gift is wisdom. So here we have, this is some of our earliest expressions of spiritual development. And knowing that we have it there and putting it in a format where people can find it and then get the underlying meanings applied to their own life, it's fresh, it's real, it's lasted all this time down to our day, and that's what real holiness is about. It brings holiness to every century and every way of life. It gives us then a sensible awareness of what holiness really is.
I know this is a hard question, but do you have an all-time favorite story from the Desert Fathers or Mothers?
Well, I really have a number of them. Amas Encletica is one of my favorites.
This was a woman, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, she was a desert mother. Mother Encletica. And apparently, whoever has gone to her for spiritual direction must be asking a question something like this. Ama, I've been at this for 15 years, and I don't think I'm getting any place. What is the use of my going on like this? And the answer comes back, well, it's like this. At first, when we build a fire, there's nothing but smoke and it gets in our eyes. But if we can just feed that fire long enough, it erupts and we have all the warmth and all the energy we need. So it is, she said, with the spiritual life. At first, there is great effort and it seems we're not getting any place at all. But if we stay and tend the fire, it will erupt in us and burn away all the dross of life. It's a marvelous story. We all think that we're not getting anywhere. We all say, I had a spiritual director 10 years ago and I just quit because I couldn't see any purpose to it. Or I got into this mess and I got depressed about it. What do I do? Stay with it, stay with it, stay with it, because someday it's going to burst into flame in you and then all the old stuff is gone.
You've had another exciting thing in your life besides the publication of this book, and that is the publication of your biography, your first biography. What does that feel like, and are you satisfied with it?
I think Tom Roberts, the writer, has done a marvelous job. My own life has been quite complex. I know that when you look at the life of a nun, you have got to think that it is forever monotonous, dull. That's actually not true. And if my life is proof of anything, it's proof of that. Having said all that, trust me, even the word biography is shocking to me. And I say to myself, what is going on here? So he insisted that this was a good thing to do, and I allowed him to do it because he's a good writer and I trusted him.
I'm not giving too much away here because I think it's been written about in some of the magazines, but you reveal some highly personal information that people may not have known about Sister Joan Chittister before, and that is your stepfather was alcoholic and abusive to you and your mother. Was that difficult to reveal that?
It was almost impossible. I have never. It's not, you use the words very delicately, not too many people knew, only, no one knew. I was ashamed as a child. It was the great family secret. I had developed a script around my life that explained where I came from, why, how long I'd been there, what we were there for. And on the other hand, as I told Tom, nobody else had ever asked me those questions. If I had been confronted with those questions earlier, I don't know what I'd have done. I'd probably answered, because it's more my nature to give you an honest answer than it is to fool you about anything. So yeah, it was very difficult. And yet, at my age, when the questions came, I said to myself, Joan, nothing's going to change until women begin to call their lives, to call the abuse, to call the rejection, to call the oppression, to call the inequity, to call the victimization. It's not going to change. And who's going to change it? Only women who have gone through it are in a position to speak to these things with real honesty and the truth of how it affects people and how it has to stop. How half of the human race cannot be, can continue to be made invisible, made lesser, treated as if they're not fully human. And so I simply said to myself, Joan, it's time. If you want things to change, you're going to have to help them to change. And my hope is, I used to, when I counsel women who are in the position, I never tell them that I've been in the position, but I do tell them this. I say to them, nothing will change until you expose it. The minute you expose it, the relationship changes, the hiding changes, and it's over. So I'm trying to make exposure. In other words, it happens really to nice people, to people where you don't expect to find it. And until we all say enough, and I'm not going to let you get away with it. I'm not going to tell your lies anymore. And when I stop telling your lies, then you have to face them.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Joan Chittister. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
It's easy to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm Judy Valente.